This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The views and opinions of Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris should not be taken too seriously, especially when they give advice. Do not take Marshall's analogies literally, especially when it comes to Russell Dorsey. The sports thoughts of Rahimi and Harris may change at any time. Remember, it's just sports.
Okay, thanks. Bye. Bye.
Rahimi and Harris, 10 to 2 on 670 The...
Things are going to be different at Halas Hall. Listen to the word George McCaskey used.
He's focused, he's innovative, he's smart, and the players respect the hell out of him. Respect the hell out of him. The hell out of him.
Whoa! George is cussing now? George is cussing on TV?
Over the years, I got to be quite a connoisseur of soap. My personal preference is for Lux, but I found Palmolive had a nice piquant after-dinner flavor.
I'm not giving that man credit for saying the word hell.
I don't even think hell was on Hard Knocks last year.
Are you sure you don't want Hard Knocks for this moment again?
There's a bond going between Eberflus and Williams.
That bond was severed and set on fire.
I'm here for George letting it loose a little bit, man. I'm here for it. Even if it's like Ned Flanders plus.
Hello, neighborino to the north. I sure like the cut of your gibberish.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Hello and good morning. This is Tuesday and it is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. Keep on cussing, George McCaskey. Keep on cussing. We are broadcasting live from the Score's Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. When we have breaking news, it is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. Our producers are Ray Diaz, Robbie Triano, and Brandon Fryer. You can text us 312-644-6767 or call us as well. And we are on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. Our video producers are a great team. It is Connor O'Donnell, Jacob Stutz as well, helping out alongside Max Curtis. Marshall Harris and Layla Rahimi joining you. And we had a good laugh, I think, on the group thread last night, Marshall, talking about what we heard from both DJ Moore and Noah Sewell. And we joked about the question, are the Bears scared of their coaching staff and Ben Johnson? The fact that they even had practice yesterday was a big deal the day after a game. I don't necessarily know that they're scared, but I do feel like there is a sense of respect, and you're seeing it play out in different ways so far this training camp.
How could you not respect Ben Johnson based on what he's done as a dynamic play caller the last three seasons for the Detroit Lions, having them as one of, if not arguably, the best offense in the NFL? I think that's one of the things, is he brings this resume where you're like, okay, I respect the resume. I see what you've done. I've seen what you've done against us within our division. But the other thing is, I think going through the first preseason game and now this practice that they had after preseason game number one, you're looking at him like, I really don't know what to expect from this man on a very personal level. And I think that keeps players on edge. And you know what? I love it.
Well, be careful what you ask for, right? Like, we joked all about accountability last season and how they wanted it, and then it was suddenly a buzzword in a lot of the press conferences. And we made the joke, like, is accountability in the room with you? If so, blink twice. But you never really knew either, A, who they were directing it at when they said they wanted it, B, who they needed it from, although we have a pretty good idea because some of those people aren't here anymore. But I also think players were involved in those statements as well. And then see how it was being applied. So when you hear common threads every week in training camp, in various practices, out of different players, both veterans, rookies, and new free agents to the team, you get the feeling that you're starting to put this together in a way that at least you're hoping training camp isn't talked about next season at the end of the year like it was in February of this year.
The message was clear. Day one, press conference one, the introduction. Get comfortable getting uncomfortable.
Get comfortable being uncomfortable.
And
get
so,
comfortable being uncomfortable. Do we all just repeat it until we believe it?
Whoa,
his name is Robert Paulson.
I think if you look in the mirror and you say, get comfortable being uncomfortable three times, Ben Johnson appears in the room.
Oh, like and some then
you're
Candyman
just doing
stuff.
Up downs and stuff. The next thing you know, you might be running a hook route or something. Maybe a fade to the end zone.
No, no, but we heard him say it, and that was one thing, right? He's up there. It's his introductory press conference. But what we're learning of late is that these players do seem a tad uncomfortable, and I don't know that they're necessarily comfortable with it yet. But they don't have a choice but to kind of endure and get as comfortable as they can with the idea that they may not know what's coming. They may not know what to expect, except for they do know one thing to expect, that a certain standard is being established, that if they mess up, they're going to be told, do it again, or go to the sideline and watch the next team do it. I like the tone that has been set in that it isn't just ho-hum. There's been nothing about what's happened under Ben Johnson so far that has been ho-hum.
Well, I also go back to the reason we bring this up is because we heard from DJ Moore and Noah Sewell yesterday. And when DJ Moore speaks, we listen. He's an established veteran. He's on his third contract with this team. He was expected to be not only the leader or one of the leaders on the offense last year, but a trusted veteran voice. And we know how it played out. You know, he's earned his keep as a veteran in the league, consistently gets over 1,000 yards per season. When you put it all together, the guy has a reason to speak. And let's go back to OTAs when even Marshall, we heard from him then talking about body language and how he absorbed that. He wasn't afraid to tell you that that was something that was a focus. And if he's saying it, that means he's also taking responsibility for it as well on himself. So this isn't a guy shirking responsibility after what we heard even months ago. This is a guy who's telling you that he's a part of it too. I think you have to have the veterans buy the concept and get on board in order for it to work. And the reason we even brought this whole discussion up today, and we were laughing about it last night in our group thread after we all listened to that press conference, was because of a quote involving the phrase, the evil eye. So let's hear it now out of DJ Moore.
It's going to get us where we want to go. What's hard about it is that you really got to be in your playbook and know every last detail of that playbook, because like he do, if not, you're going to get either the evil eye or you're just going to get yelled at to get in the right spot. So I try to stay away from that.
He had some fun when he said it. There was a smirk, but the message remains the same.
The smirk was there, and I think for DJ Moore specifically, something you have to remember, for all of his individual accolades, DJ Moore has been in the NFL, what, 7 seasons now? He's been around for a long time. One thing that DJ Moore has yet to do is be on a team with a winning record in 7 seasons. Can you imagine how that wears on a player, on an individual thinking, okay, this is the year we're going to turn things around?
As somebody who watches losing football year after year, yes, I can have an idea of how that would be frustrating.
So he had 5 years in Carolina, never a winning record. Now 2 years with the Bears that have gone horribly wrong, especially considering the 10-game losing streak he endured last year. And now he's got a guy in Ben Johnson who may have answers that he didn't know existed.
And that's why also it's not yards related with him, I don't think. Like, yeah, in 2023, he had a career high. You know, he had 1,364 yards. He was short of that in 24 when it came to the 1,000-yard, but not by much. 966, I still round up in that case. Is that ideal for him? No, you expect to see more out of him yards-wise. But first things first, you have to figure out how you fit in on this offense. I know we wanted to get into that a little bit later in the next segment on Raheemi and Harris here on 670 The Score, talking Bears. But I also think that we need to get into even the fact that they were talking yesterday. To have a practice, that's not something you typically see a practice after a game like that at Halas Hall. But Declan Doyle, who I think we should hear more from, he discussed why that was even necessary to begin with.
The guys who didn't play in the game or guys who played limited reps, they're going out and having a good work day. It's kind of what I've been exposed to around Sean Payton the last, you know, 6 years of being around that. We always practice the day after a game. And I think it actually goes back to Bill Parcells. But there's this misnomer that, you know, you're playing in the game and there's a really physical wear and tear for all of them. A lot of them are taking more limited reps. So guys that are under, you know, call it 15, 20 reps, really they're ready. They can still go practice today and still go have a good day. And really it's geared more towards those starters that didn't play in the game yesterday, trying to give them this game-like feel.
So when you hear the offensive coordinator Declan Doyle talking about this as we discuss the Bears and where they are here on Raheemy and Harris, you add up what they did yesterday with the practice right after the game, not for everyone, but with players who did not play Saturday or who had limited reps, limited game snaps. And
or
you go back,
zero.
Or zero, yes. And then you go back to before the game where you had 87 plays run by Caleb Williams and the rest of the starting skill position players. And you're understanding that they are trying to do their best to simulate without preseason action reps in a system in which all these guys are learning for the first time. I'm good with that. And this explanation makes me feel a little bit better about the way they're going about doing things. But at the end of the day, Layla, they got to play some preseason games. They got to play some preseason
snaps.
Well,
they only have two left. Like, that's all you get left, Marshall.
We don't have four anymore.
That.
It's three now.
And they might not even play in either one of those, the starters, which games are left. So there's that aspect of it as well.
It's unacceptable, I think. And here's what would make it acceptable is if they don't play any preseason games, but the offense looks good in the first 4 weeks of the season, like consistently good. If it doesn't, you're going to say, I guess they could have used the preseason snaps.
Yeah, that's the problem is everything is looked at through the lens of you'd better not make the same mistakes in preseason that you conveniently told us about after the season ended last year. It all goes back to that statement for me.
If it was a highly experienced veteran quarterback that we were talking about, if it was an offensive line that had just been assembled in the last 4 months, then maybe we're having a different conversation. But I think Caleb Williams, and we've already heard him publicly, quote unquote, campaigning to get some preseason snaps, right? I think he needs to campaign a little bit harder. Go back to Jared Goff, go back to 2022. They were like, you don't need to play. That was Dan Campbell in Detroit. He lobbied his head coach and his offensive coordinator. He didn't play a lot. He got 10 preseason snaps, but he said that gave him a lot more confidence dealing with a new offense than just, you know, doing what we're seeing the Bears do right now.
I mean, but at that point, Jared Goff had, what, 4 or 5 years of experience
in
the league? Yeah,
that's the experienced guy saying he needs it.
Right, but I think he also then had the skins on the wall to say he wanted to do it, and he wanted to play with his offensive line who was starting. You know, that's the difference. But when it comes to at least controlling practice yesterday, that step, the fact that they want to do that, they want to hold it, and then you hear about how players feel when they're going to work that day, I think that's a key piece of how you see this coming together in a way that says, if your bosses are telling you to do something, you'd better get out there. And not only that, but you'd better be prepared. Another veteran who had something to say about that regime, Ben Johnson's staff, is a veteran in Kevin Byard. You know, we're not just telling you about rookies and their impressions of the staff and getting to the league. These are guys who have skins on the wall when it comes to what they've seen. Here's what Byard had to say about Ben Johnson and his staff.
Just his intensity, attention to detail. He's a leader of men. I know that's always kind of been talked about just as a head coach, but I just really enjoy the energy that he sets every single day. You know, I've been part of a new kind of leadership change, culture change, and it feels very similar. Doesn't matter if you're year one, undrafted, year 10, you got to come in and show every single day and show and prove, and you feel it, you know what I mean? So, like I said, as a veteran, I've been through it, and it's very similar to what it was when I was with Vrabel. So, and I don't like to make the comparison as far as, like, just because we have Vrabel's going to have success, whatever it may be, but just I understand what it's like to have to reset a culture, and I think he's doing a great job.
This segment on Raheemy and Harris Talking Bears is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
I like listening to players who have been there, done that, so to speak, and certainly Kevin Byard falls under that umbrella, that window, and I'm excited about what these guys can get together and do with this coaching staff who, even though they haven't coached any games for the Bears, the potential is all there, Layla. You can see it. The problem is they play in a really good division against other really good teams, and it may take some time, so I'm trying to figure out internally, right, what level of patience am I going to have with this coaching staff and these players as they embark on this journey together, and knowing that, you know, you've got the head coach that you wanted all offseason, the head coach that most people were clamoring for in Ben Johnson. And I'm operating from a place where I feel like it's going to take some time, but it should be worth it as long as the quarterback is good.
I know you want to skip to the end of the book, but there's we are still very much in the acknowledgments.
Where are the acknowledgments on the program? Is that like the very first thing, or are we in the prep? We're past the preface, right? Because
no, acknowledgments are the first thing.
So what's after the acknowledgments? Take me through it. Tell me how far away we are from like the part that I want to see.
You want to see the end?
Not the end, but like more stuff.
You want to get to the good part of the book.
The good part of the, give me the narrative hook, at least, right? I'm not asking for the climax.
I think we've seen the cover, and now we've opened the book, and now we're getting more into it. So I like what you're saying. We're at the acknowledgement stage.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I've always seen them in the beginning, right? Sometimes yeah. they're at the end if it's like the footnotes, but like this book is dedicated to so and so. Like this book is dedicated to you last year who has to convince yourself that training camp is different this year than it was the year before.
Wait, is the acknowledgments, is that before or after the Ford?
It's before.
Okay. So we're not even to the Ford. All right.
I love books.
I love books, but that's another story.
What's the name of this book?
That's a good question.
The Puppy That Lost Its Way. I award you no points. May God have mercy on your soul.
I'm going to call it Untitled. I don't think we have a title yet. So it's just, a work in progress, like when it's just untitled. Like,
working title?
Yeah, working title. Sorry. Thank you.
I also think it's important, though, to acknowledge that in this practice they had yesterday, which they typically don't do on other teams the day after a game. Part of the reason you're hearing this stuff from the players is because the coaches are not just they're not just holding to the schedule. They're also holding to how they conduct the practice. Declan Doyle, who I think we need to hear more from, especially as the season goes on, given the attention paid to the offensive coordinator last year. And yes, I know Ben Johnson is here, but the OC still has a job to do. Doyle talked about how the coaching staff doesn't want to take shortcuts right now either.
I think we're all being reminded that every day, you know, that's upholding the standard, is that there are no shortcuts. Everything we do matters. Every single little detail matters. And, you know, we try to use those as teaching moments with all of our players. You know, it's showing a clip and showing, hey, here's this backside receiver, and, you know, he's kind of loafing on the backside. Here goes a screen out the front side. If he hauls and blocks the safety, this is going to be a touchdown. And it's this little thing that, you know, he may not see as very important, but we're trying to get them all to understand every single thing we do every day is critical to the operation.
If you get everybody believing that, and you understand that the practice is important for you every single time you're on the field as a player, there might be something you need to add to your game, your knowledge, your skill set, your better understanding of the offense, so you don't get the evil eye.
The level of detail that Declan Doyle is explaining right there is so fascinating. 1 year removed from when players are saying, we're running plays, mistakes are being made, we're not even trying to redo stuff. That's just such a contrast to what we heard as last year went on and on and on. So I'm happy with that explanation. And I think the details are so important when you've got 11 guys trying to do the same thing and making sure every single one of those people on the field is doing their job every single play. And if they're not doing their job every single play, fix it in the moment.
Well, what I was going to say is if players have that motivation and you're hearing even the veterans say that, then that's got to trickle down to everybody else on the team. Like that's the part of this. It's, are you repeating the same messages? How are you repeating those? Not that you're parroting your head coach, but how is today going to help you on Sunday? How is today going to help you on Friday of next week, on the 22nd, when you're facing the Chiefs? Those aspects. So that's what I'm looking for a lot of the time at this time of year. And at least we're learning more about the style matching up with the schedule, matching up with the substance. We have more to come here on Raheemi and Harris on The Score, as our Bears training camp coverage is presented by Chevy Drives Chicago and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. We heard from DJ Moore. We've asked a lot of questions about the run game on this team. We saw a preview of what DJ Moore could possibly do last year, actually. So we'll discuss the concept of how the Bears want to use DJ Moore and making the same things look different and the different things look the same. And in the meantime, we're giving away some stuff too. Keep listening for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Cubs against Atlanta at Wrigley Field on September 1st. It is all provided by Bosch Power Tools. The more you Bosch, the more you feel like a Bosch. DJ Moore will discuss his role in the offense next in a new wrinkle. You're listening to Raheemi and Harris on 670 The Score in the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
Raheemi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
Handoff. It's a good game. DJ Moore gets close to 10 with that.
They hand to DJ Moore. Good blocking out on the edge, and he got 10.
We're not necessarily putting guys and plugging them into certain spots and saying stick and stay. We're moving guys around. Right now, it's really a free-for-all. Coach L is kind of moving everybody around. Who can be our choice route runners? Who can do some of the option things? And we're taking it from there.
That was Ben Johnson. You also heard a highlight courtesy of ESPN, Joe Buck. DJ Moore talked yesterday at Bears camp. This is Raheemi and Harris on 670 The Score. And as we continue to try to learn how this offense is going to use its starters, I think that what we heard from DJ Moore yesterday when it came to not only his willingness to participate in the team operations, we touched on a little bit in our last segment, but also what we heard from guys like Declan Doyle talking about how DJ Moore is going to be used.
So his usage has been something I've been questioning going back to last year when it didn't seem like it could get on the same page with Caleb Williams at the rate you wanted your number one playmaker to do so with a rookie quarterback. That understood along with the fact that, of course, he had Shane Waldron trying to draw things up, trying to scheme things up, trying to cook things up. And then Thomas Brown, for a quick second, was the offensive coordinator, and then he had to be the head coach.
Well, and I think part of this goes back to if you don't have the players you want at certain parts of your position groups, right? If you don't have the running back room that you think is ideal, and we've touched a lot on that, especially in the offseason, and you don't have maybe enough supply there, but you know you want to run the ball to help be a foundation of your offense, then you're going to have to go with the skill sets of other people on your offense to help make it work. And we know DJ Moore has speed. Not only is he a willing runner, he was a track athlete in high school. He ran the 400, which I think is one of the hardest races to run because I feel like it's a sprint and a distance at the same time. He said it was easy for him. Like, I talked to him about it, but when you're a pro athlete, a lot of things are easy. Point being, he's willing to do that. You're seeing that skill set appear. Now, he has 431 yards rushing to his career. He had 75 last year and only 21 yards the year before. But we know that in 2023, that's where he racked up a lot of receiving yards. Either way, I don't think that using a running back is your best or your wide receiver is a best solution at running back. But I think it could help at least give them more multiple looks and also spell results when you may not have exactly what you need out of DeAndre Swift, Roschon Johnson, and Kyle Manungai.
Let's be real. He's not going to be somebody who's getting a heavy volume. I mean, Ben Johnson's talking about using him, quote, a couple of times a game. That means you're just adding like a wrinkle, if you will. And if you can find another way to get the ball in your best playmaker's hands, do it and figure out all the ways. And that's what Ben Johnson gets paid the big bucks to do. I think DJ Moore, because we've seen his visible frustration over the last year plus in not getting the ball when maybe he felt like he deserved it or could do something with it. And we've seen what he's capable of with the ball in his hands when you talk about yards after the catch. That if you can find a way to prioritize him getting the ball more times than not, which I think there was a whole lot of not in there last year. I know he had a lot of receiving yards, but in terms of impacting the game, it wasn't the same as what we saw a couple of years ago. I am all for this. I highly endorse this. And there's no other play caller I can think of outside of maybe Kyle Shanahan that I would entrust this type of responsibility to than Ben Johnson.
Cliff Kingsbury comes to mind. You know, there's a lot of hot names. Of course, I mean, Andy Reid, obviously. But when it comes to at least figuring out how to utilize this talent, I'm into listening. And I feel like, again, a lot of people offensively last year didn't see their appropriate amount of volume just because it was a function of a bad offense. And when you're not running enough plays, that's going to happen. Here's what DJ Moore had to say about taking snaps out of the backfield yesterday.
They first told you they wanted to try some stuff out with you in the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
What did
I think? I was just like, go ahead, add it all onto the plate now. I mean, just be an athlete at this point, and I got to learn it all, and that's what I'm doing.
What do you like? Is there something you like about catch the ball out of the backfield?
I mean, it don't matter. As long as I can make a positive play out of it, I'm cool with it.
Did they bring up the idea of you in the backfield in OTAs or before training camp? When was that first kind of plan?
Whenever they told me is when they told they might have told me back then, but I don't really be paying, like, I don't pay too much attention because I was still learning, like, where I'm playing at and all and moving all around. So when they told me it was an install for back, it was like, okay, another thing to learn, but, I mean, it's going well.
They talk about wanting to just get the ball in your hands. Do you feel comfortable taking handoffs if you had to, or no? Really not there yet?
No, I feel comfortable. I don't, like I said, just being an athlete at this point, you just do it all and just attack it.
Can you give some context to help us understand how much the extra workload is to learn that on top of responsibility?
I mean, I just break it up in the different parts. You got the receiver part, you got the running back part, and then you got the whole concept part. And, I mean, it's daunting, but, I mean, I get paid the big bucks to do it, so why not?
It's the end for me. It's daunting, but I get paid the big bucks to do it, so why not? And we know the man wants to be productive. This is a chance to be extra productive. Now, it is a lot of extra work when you're talking about every single scheme, every single play. You now need to know what the receiver and the running backs are doing. I mean, all the receivers, obviously, but what the running back's doing. That's what's interesting to me is to see how he embraces this and how it washes over him.
Be productive. That is all I want for this Bears offense. That's all I want.
I was trying to spell productive, but it got long. So.
That's okay. We've got time to figure that out in the commercial break. Either way, I like the fact that he's on board and he's interested in this concept. The Bears are going to have to run a lot of misdirection, play action, different types of ways to utilize all of the field, spread the field out in order to win. That's just how it works in the league when the offense looks good. I'm hoping that's the case here. And I feel like even if you were to do some sort of reverse where it looks pretty complicated, they've got the offensive line now to block at the line of scrimmage to where even if he gets the ball or the handoff, say he's 3 or 4 yards back of the line, he's still got enough speed and there should be enough blocking there to be able to handle that to where that play would work. Even if it's a good old-fashioned reverse.
I think that's the biggest part of this, Layla, as we talk about DJ Moore and his added role is getting some reps out of the backfield in the running backs room, although he says he's never been to the running backs room. He's just had one-on-one discussions with Eric Bieniemy about taking running back reps here on Raheemy and Harris. If you go out and do all the stuff they went out and did as far as fortifying your offensive line, in theory, whatever you draw up, you should be able to block. That's the point here. So, yeah, you should be able to be as creative as possible because it's not a question of, I don't know if my interior line can hold up. No, no. You went out and got high-level guys, allegedly, from left tackle all the way to right tackle, although we're still figuring out who's going to be the end-all, be-all at left tackle.
Yes. I think that's the idea, but we just don't see that happen very often. We didn't see it with most of the years of Matt Nagy. There was a lot of stuff drawn up that they couldn't block. We didn't see it even with not just Shane Waldron, but going back to Luke Getsy. There was a lot of stuff they drew up they couldn't block. I feel like that should be your first question. But we've seen many times that that's not the case.
Well, under Ryan Poles, it's never been a season where we start and be like, I have supreme confidence in that offensive line. And at least now, I think most people would look at that offensive line, not just us, but people around the league and say, they should be able to block up pretty much anything.
Yeah, I still don't know that we're at supreme when you don't know who your left tackle is going to be and the options are your fifth rounder and who's coming off of a broken ankle and a second round rookie. Like that's the hard part.
Don't forget about the third rounder whenever he comes back. Karan.
whenever he comes back. I feel like that was the discussion last year. We were trying to figure out how he was going to be used then.
Oh, man.
Let's hear from Declan Doyle, the OC, on how he wants to address using DJ Moore in the backfield.
DJ is one of those guys that you really love when the ball's in his hands. And so just trying to find ways to be creative about how we do that, trying to get him touches in every way we can. I think that he has good he's very natural back there. He has good vision. And it's one of those things that, you know, we'll test it and mess with it a little bit. And, you know, we'll see where it goes.
That sounds like a guy who doesn't want to tell you how he's using him because that would give some stuff away.
Just imagine if you're a defensive coordinator and you just don't know where DJ Moore is lining up any given play. I think that's problematic for most defenses. And I love that as, like I said, a wrinkle. Not a guy who's going to sit here and carry the ball 10 times out of the backfield a game, but just the idea of it can put guys in distress on defense. And that's what you want to do.
Yeah, you want to put the defenders in conflict. And I think appropriately, you want to make sure that you're committing talent to knowing defensively where he is on the field at all times. So because of that, something else is probably going to open up too. If you know that that's a threat, how does that change the shape of the defense that's facing you? And that's a big piece of it. I think that's the whole idea. Now, how do they get him there? Is it motion? Is it a shift? You know, we didn't see a lot of pre-snap motion on Sunday. We saw a lot of shifts. We saw a lot of, I think there was 12 personnel too. So that kind of makes it a little bit different as well. Saying all of that, that's what you want. You know, if you're Ben Johnson and that offensive coordinator, Declan Doyle, you want to make sure that you're making it look the same to have the different result. But I was kind of surprised at how the formations were low-key, you know, based on what the offensive firepower is going to look like. But is this a finished product? No.
No, I think you saw a preseason version of what we were looking at. Not nothing. I'm not saying it's not going to look anything like the regular season version, but not anything given away from what you're seeing in the preseason. I expect that to continue the next couple of games with whoever is out there. Good point brought up by 630 on the text line. I have faith in DJ to do just about anything on a football field, but really wish we had a more reliable running back room. I think that's a fair sentiment to share.
You want to know that somebody is a productive downhill runner. And we just don't have that confidence. Like, on the outsides, cool. You might be forced into running outside zone whether or not you want to.
Yeah, the personnel is going to dictate. But again, we'll see what... After watching Kyle Manungai in very limited, very preseason-y action, there is an idea that the blocking might be there from the Dan Rochard. Once we see the first team out there with whoever's going to be a left tackle, the blocking might be there, and that might reign supreme for this offense.
I unfortunately saw him get beat a couple times in pass protection, and his size showed up. Football Talk on the Score is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Coming up next, it is our weekly conversation with the Cubs left fielder Ian Happ, and it's his birthday. So we'll wish him a happy birthday ahead of a very important series against Toronto coming up next here on Raheem and Harris on The Score.
The talent that's here and the talent that is continuing to develop here. We obviously have some mainstay guys like Ian Happ.
Ian Happ, Cubs all-star outfielder.
A fly ball hit to deep left center field. This may go. It's gone! Ian Happ goes the other way. It's 5-0 Cubs. A solo shot by Happ. That's his 16th of the year.
Gold Glove Award winner.
High fly ball deep left. Happ going back at the well near the wall. Does he have a play? Yes. Makes the catch as the wind knocks it down 2 away.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
But I will say about the Cubs deadline, great for us. And then Kittredge, a righty that throws a sinker slider, makes it really tough on righties. Like, those are two great additions, and I think make the bullpen really deep.
Connect Roasters coffee enthusiast.
Here's a man that probably has 5 fresh pots a day.
Ian Happ on 670 The Score.
We toast you, Ian Happ.
Ah, yes. The birthday song by the Beatles. I first heard it on 16 Candles, which I'm pretty sure refers to New Trier. By pretty sure, I mean I am. This is Raheem and Harris on the Score. We are happy to go to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Happy birthday, Ian Happ.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Ian, have you ever spent your birthday outside the country celebrating?
We were actually here in Toronto in 23, at the same time, right over my birthday.
Okay.
What an odd coincidence. I know. Is there anything that you do in Toronto, like Tim Hortons coffee or something, since maybe Connect isn't in Canada? Like, well, how do you observe a Canadian birthday since this is year two for you?
You know, both times we've had an off day here, and I've gotten to play golf. So played golf yesterday and played golf last time. I can't remember what the off day was. The off day might have actually been the 12th, or it might have been the 11th. It was very similar timing. So I got to play golf on the off day before my birthday. So pretty good way to spend it.
How much does an off day come in handy when a team is going through what you guys seem to be going through offensively since the All-Star break?
Yeah, I think just this time of the year, it's nice to have a few days, especially like we got in, you know, Sunday baseball, and we got in at like 4:30 in the morning the other day. So having that off day and just a day to recharge for everybody is great.
That is something that I feel like Joe Maddon always talked about, the Sunday night baseball turnaround, especially for whatever reason. I feel like it was typically a Cardinals game for you guys where that would occur often. When you're factoring in the logistics, especially at least having an off day afterward, I know that helps, but what time are you even leaving St. Louis on Sunday night after that almost an hour-long rain delay and then the game?
Yeah, even with that delay, I think, you know, we got out of there probably around 11. Then with the travel, you know, we lose an hour on the time change plus customs. You know, that's a long trip getting back to the hotel and getting in at like 4:30 in the morning. So yeah, having that off day, everybody kind of get a chance to explore Toronto a little bit, relax, get to bed and get recharged is nice. And if Toronto's been playing good baseball, it's going to be a good series. And you know, that's the fun part of this thing is you get to do it every single day, no matter how good the last week or month's been or how bad it's been, you get to go and do it again.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about just the process of the off day. Can you even sleep in that much when you play that late, knowing there's a certain routine you have to have? Like, I worry that, I guess, sometimes on a day off, if you sleep in too late, for example, does that get you out of the routine you're normally in during the week when you don't have the day off?
Yeah, I think the routine changes so much just with being in different cities night to day and time change and everything that guys are pretty good about. Whether it's getting sleep or understanding that you have to, you know, if you don't get a ton of sleep going into the off day, that you can get to bed early and get like a full night going into the next day. So I think guys' bodies we're adjusted to not being adjusted. We're adjusted to having those weird times and those off hours. So that's just part of this time of the season and part of, you know, doing this every day is you get used to it.
Just under 7 weeks left in the season, 45 games on the schedule. Are we into this is a sprint mode? Where are you as far as understanding how much time you have left to make up ground on the Brewers who have a 6.5 game lead?
Yeah, I think that's the tough part about this time of season is, you know, the Brewers are playing really good baseball. They've been obviously fantastic. They've won however many in a row, and, you know, we can't be looking at them every day. We just have to play our game and stack a few series wins on top of each other. I think, you know, we haven't been winning the series, but we were early in the year. And you know, we've done a good job of avoiding any prolonged stretches of losing streaks. But the, you know, winning series and getting back to winning series regularly and controlling what we can control in that sense is kind of where we have to be. You know, you can't be in chase mode and be watching every day. You just got to be really focused on this group and what we're doing and who we're playing because it's the only thing you can control. You know, the only thing that we can control is the way that we go about our business every day and then see where it falls at the end of the year. And it sounds cliche, but it's as true as it gets.
Well, and you're one of the veteran voices in that clubhouse. You know, you've been through this before where there was a tight division race. You've been on teams where, you know, you face a situation like a game 163, for example. You're with other guys like Kyle Tucker, who also knows a thing or two about playing for playoff teams. You know, how much does that leadership come in stretches like this, where you guys can say to younger players maybe, or just like have that mentality, knowing it's not just about what's happening around you, but what you're trying to face each and every day?
Yeah, we have a group of guys who have been there and who have seen it, you know, guys that have won, guys that have been in deep playoff races. You know, Dansby is a great example of that, and what they went through in Atlanta to get to the point that they did where they won a World Series. And, you know, I think having that understanding and that experience is really important. And like I said, that's the group of this veteran leadership and the guys in the clubhouse is to remind everybody that, you know, we can only control what we can control, and we have to be really focused on that. And the only thing that matters is winning baseball games, and however we do it, you know, and being really stubborn to the things that have put us in this position so far: the defense, the base running, the focus on what we can control every day, and the ability to score in a bunch of different ways. Like, we have that ability as a group, and it hasn't shown up as much offensively in the last couple of weeks, and you know, we're obviously aware of that. And so getting back to what we do really well and putting pressure on teams is a big part of it.
Ian Happ, the Cubs Gold Glover, joining us as he does every week here on Raheem and Harris. Ian, you guys haven't had a winning series against a team with a winning record since right out of the break when you took 2-3 from the Red Sox. How much of a boost can it give you knowing you're going up on the road against the team with the best record in the American League to come away with a series win here as you get ready for, I know you know what's around the corner with that Milwaukee Brewers series next week?
Yeah, I mean, huge. I think that's one of those things that can be a big confidence builder. You go in and play a really good team and take care of business. Those are the things that they can give you a boost and remind the group, you know, just how good you are and the abilities that you have. And, you know, going through a stretch like this where we've played some good teams, some teams with winning records, and haven't come out on top of a series, you know, being able to kind of right that ship and feel that again. And we had that stretch early in the year where it just felt like every series we played, we were finding a way to win 2 out of 3. And so getting back to that point where you're, all right, that's what it feels like, take 2 out of 3. That's what we're capable of. And then kind of going from there.
Ian, happy birthday. We appreciate the time. Good luck with your series in Toronto.
Thanks, Ian.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a good one.
That's Ian Happ, and Connect Roasters was the one who tipped us off today on social media. They were the first ones I saw on social media to say happy birthday to Ian Happ. So they win. They win their coffee, which is a prize. I get it when I go to Steingold's.
It seems like the caffeine will be flowing for him north of the border.
Tim Hortons is decent, though. You know, you've been in Tim Hortons country.
I have been in Tim Hortons country, but you know, I don't drink coffee like that. The only coffee I drink is straight espresso, just to keep it going.
People like the Tim Hortons if they can get it. Like, I feel like it's pretty popular anytime you can acquire it.
It's a hidden gem.
We have more to come next on Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. More baseball talk, because there's a quote from Carter Hawkins that is making the rounds after the trade deadline that is picking up steam, and for good reason. When we say pick a lane, I'm not sure which one the organization decided to go with after hearing this. You'll want to hear it too. That's next on Rahimi and Harris on The Score.